Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Schedule picking back up in a big way after the holidays now for the Canucks. They take on the Seattle Kraken at 7 in Seattle tonight before coming home just for one game against the Nashville Predators tomorrow. They've got 15 games in the month of January, a lot of those on the road out east in particular for the Canucks. And, you know, we'll see how long they are without Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. I know Hughes had the week-to-week designation put on him by Rick Tocchet. Friedman, earlier today, we played the Petey Miller stuff, but he also kind of said, you know, there's maybe reason to believe it could be a quicker return to the lineup for Quinn Hughes than week-to-week might suggest.
Well, it needs to be.
Like, sure looks like it.
It needs to be. I mean, so let's talk about that Flames game a bit.
Okay.
Because I thought the Canucks came out and, like, played hard, battled hard, managed the puck well, were in that game, did everything they could to give themselves a shot. They won the special teams battle. Penalty killing was legitimately very good. Got a power play goal. I thought Lankanen was solid. I thought they had like three scoring chances the entire night.
Mm-hmm.
And most concerning, against a very mid Flames team, the moment they tied it up 1-1, the Flames stacked like seven consecutive heavy shifts on top of another, and all the Canucks could do was ice the puck three times. Like, it was brutal. And that, to me, is the sign. Like, if you were watching that game thinking, ooh, I think the Canucks are just hanging on here, which is definitely how I watched the game, it was abundantly, like, that was inarguable after the Flames' response to Vancouver scoring the 1-1 goal. If you're at a point where you can't hit Calgary's fastball, you can't catch up to it at all. You're hopeless. It might blow the bat out of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
You're dead in the water. Like, to lose that game in regulation with all of what I just said, right? Your goaltending was good. Yegor Sharangovich was spoiling scoring chances for funsies for some reason. You know, like, you win the special teams battle and you still lose in regulation against a team that's probably not going to make the playoffs. Woof.
Yeah, and they got, and I think rightfully so, a lot of praise for the spirit, you know, how hard they were working. Obviously, they're sticking up for each other, right? They're dropping the gloves. They're doing all that sort of stuff. They're showing a ton of energy. It wasn't one of these games where it's like, oh, they're flat. They looked disinterested. They looked extremely interested. They were not flat.
I thought the Miller line, Miller, Besser, DeBrusque, actually had a really good game. Like, that they won their matchup against the Mikhail Backlund line. It was everything else.
So, but the problem is, you give all those compliments, all of which are totally fair. I'm not disputing them. But in some ways, it just puts the talent disparity in sharper relief, right? Because if you have a lot of talent in your lineup and you're playing with that much effort and intensity, you should be steamrolling the Flames. You know what I mean? Like, you should be controlling the game. And the fact that even with the effort level dang close to 100%, it was a slog. It was a struggle to generate scoring chances. Like, that, I don't want to take anything away from the effort, because you need that.
Not just a struggle.
But it's very concerning.
Yeah, it felt like they could play 180 minutes, and they were barely going to get close to testing Dustin Wolf 5-on-5. I mean, Miller had the one wrist shot that Wolf saved, and
yeah, Bluger had a nice one in the first period, like,
right,
coming close.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then that's it.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, that's pretty much it. Look, we're now at almost 1,100 minutes of without Quinn Hughes minutes that the Canucks have played 5-on-5. So we're at a point where if this was like a full team thing, I would be like, okay, we actually kind of do have a sense of their true talent level. And here's sort of what we know. Like, they've been out attempted by 250, outshot by more than 100, and outscored by 12 in those non-Hughes minutes across, you know, what would effectively be like 29 games for an NHL team. So I think we think that that's their true talent level. Well, extrapolate that over like times three, over a full season, prorated over 82. If you're a team that gets out attempted by 600, outshot by 300, and outscored by 35 at 5-on-5, you know what you are? You're a lottery team, or you're the 2015 Calgary Flames. Like, that's it. Yep. So with in Hughes's absence and in Pettersson's absence, and Pettersson's absence looms large here too, because he's the only Canucks centerman in the black by goal differential and minutes away from Quinn Hughes on the Canucks roster, right? Like, it's so grim when you remove Hughes from this team. Even if they don't get Hughes back before the Montreal game, I honestly think we're at a point where playing Montreal, Nashville, Seattle, if this team can get like 3 points from that, you'd be like, good. That's awesome. That's
500.
That's a win.
Yeah. And if it's, I mean, that's only, that's less than a week away, right? That's like 4 days away, the Montreal game. So, I think it would be a huge win just to have Hughes back after that game. If he only misses three more games.
Yeah,
you'll take that. You're thanking your lucky stars for that, right? Because they have now.
I'm saying there's a real roadmap where they're just dead in the water without this guy. In fact, I think that's the fat part of the bell curve.
Like if he's out of the lineup, I mean, have we seen anything to the contrary? You know what I mean? That they're able to be a consistently competitive winning team with him out of the lineup?
No, but I mean, with between Miller and Demko and Lankinen, like, you got to be able to, even the Anaheim Ducks are going to win 20 games.
Sure. But you can win. You can be on a pace to win 20 games, but that's bad. That's really bad. That's going to hurt you.
It is. But my point being, you get 4 games to get 3 points.
Sure.
That's the bar that I'm setting for them.
Sure.
They got to be able to leap over that.
Because I think a huge part of the context here is they've already spent the cushion they had built up in the playoff race, right? Now, if you're not a believer, and I think it's totally fair not to be a believer in the teams that are chasing them, then maybe you're not as concerned, but the margin has been spent, right? We can no longer look at it as we were, you know, a month, 6 weeks ago, and be like, hey, man, despite things going pretty weird this season, they've got this cushion in the playoff picture, and then they'll be okay. That's out right now.
Yeah, no. They have not ultimately held the fort.
No.
Like, the enemies are now within.
Yeah. And I think it's important. That's really important because it has to color what management wants to do for the rest of the season, right? And, you know, Frank Saravalli still saying, like, look, this management group has wanted to make a trade for defensemen since about 2 weeks into the season, and it's just the right piece at the right price has not been there. It's a lot harder to do that, though, I think, if you're in a dogfight for the final wild card spot than it is if you're, you know, oh, hey, second, third in the division. No, we haven't played our best, but we're still right there. I think it becomes a much different proposition if you are in this position that you're currently in. If that is the case, you know, a month from now and all of a sudden the trade deadline's right around the corner, I think it's harder to go out and make that addition that you think could kind of reshape your blue line and change how you're going to play when Quinn Hughes is off the ice.
Well, I don't see these two things as being in conflict, because what the Canucks have been looking for is a long-term fit on the blue line anyway, right? If it was as simple as getting in a lotto ticket guy to punch up your blue line, I think they could have done that multiple times over the past few months. I think they're looking for a long-term fit. I think they're looking for the sort of piece that they'd see as, you know, like they're Hronek for the second pair, right? Like that type of swing. I think they're focused on long-term fits and long-term upgrades for this roster. So I don't think the team's position necessarily alters the way they've been thinking about upgrading the defense in particular, because I think upgrading the defense has always been something with sort of a long view in mind, right? That's always kind of been... 2 weeks into the season, from 2 weeks into the season on, has kind of been the focus here. Now, I was curious after the Hughes injury news when the holiday ended, whether or not it would make sense to bring in. But then it's like, are you really going to part with a third round pick to bring in a guy like how much better are they really than Christian Molanen?
Yeah.
How much better are they really than Mark Friedman? You know, like probably pretty comparable, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, unless a unique opportunity presents itself, I don't think the Canucks fading here should impact how management views this necessarily. I do think it probably, like the situation that I think it would alter would be, does it in any way alter your timeline on Besser where, hey, we need to have a deal done because we can't afford to do the we're going to keep you past the deadline for, as an own rental because we're not 100% sure we're going to get there.
Yeah.
Right? That's where, like, the risk side of it, I could see a sort of impacting talks there, or at least the timeline under which talks have to take place.
I think those are related, though, because if you're willing to move premium assets for blue line help beyond this season, and I think that's totally fair. I mean, we can all see it, right? They need another really good piece who could move the needle on the blue line, and that's not contingent on your position in the standings. That's just, hey, we need this long-term anyway. It's like very similar to the Filip Ronan thing, right? Then your position on Brock Besser shouldn't really be contingent on your piece in the standings either, right? Because if you let him, you know what I mean? Like, no, if you lock him and lose him in free agency, then you've got a massive hole to fill anyways.
It shouldn't impact your positioning. It just should impact the timeline under which you're having talks and making the decision. You see what I'm saying?
Not really, because if it doesn't change how much you want to get it done, what does the timing matter?
Well, no, but if you're locked into a playoff spot, even if you can't come to an agreement, there's a chance you'd be like, we're going to keep this guy. He's a big game player for us. We'll have talks again in the summer. We're not closing the door, but we're not going to be able to get it done beforehand. We're comfortable with that.
Right, but I'm saying if you're willing to make a move for a defenseman, primarily looking ahead to next season and beyond, you should be treating Besser like that as well, right? That you know what I mean?
You have to if you're not 100%. My point is that you can treat him like an own rental. If the Canucks had six more points in the standings, you'd be more comfortable.
Right, so I guess you're saying maybe the decision is we want to move on from Besser, and if that's the decision, then the fact that you have to
make it on an accelerated timeline.
Right.
So that would be the one that I could see being more influenced by this. But I do also think we need to avoid falling. Like, things feel so grim. The team is going to be so limited tonight. They still might win, right? So limited tomorrow night against Nashville. Again, they also might win. Until they get Hughes and Pettersson and Hronek back, there's going to be limitations.
Mm-hmm.
While all three are out, and while definitely the top pair defenders are out, this team is like catastrophically limited, compromised, okay? And it's tempting to look at that and then do the give up on everything. This isn't their year.
Mm-hmm.
This team sucks. You know, they were wrong to go in on this core. They should have rebuilt. Like, to go back and relitigate all the arguments from 2 years ago and sort of declare, stick a fork in them, effectively, as Arizona State almost did to
Texas
yesterday. Mm-hmm. What was that, the Sugar Bowl? Anyway, no, it wasn't. Sugar Bowl's tonight. The
Fiesta, maybe? No,
yeah.
Boise was in the Fiesta, I think.
No, yeah, Boise. Whatever.
I don't know.
Okay, let's stop naming bowls.
Guys naming bowls.
The Hawaii Bowl, the Bahamas Bowl. Anyway, I don't think that's where we should be with this team. Like, I do think we need to be able to tune out the noise, the voluminous chatter about Pettersson and Miller, right? The very XOXO that's coming at us from all sides, national media and former teammates alike. Ignore the win-loss record over the last several games. I mean, they've won three games since December 8th. Okay, that's really bad. It's an 11-game stretch. They have 10 points. It's also really bad, mm-hmm. but it's not.
Well, it's
fatal.
Not. It's not kill your season.
It's exactly what we talk about. Like, okay, 10 points in 11 games, several of which you've had Hughes either out or hurt for. Pettersson's missed a stretch of time through that. Hronek's been gone for all of it. I mean, to some extent, that's kind of like what it looks like for good teams.
Yeah.
Like, when a good team goes through this much BS and still manages to, like, tread water, like, that's usually a sign of strength. Now, it could snowball over the next couple games. Like, we could be talking about this next week going into that Montreal game, and they've dropped two more regulation wins, and it looks very different. And the math looks very different, too. So, but to this point, as we stand right now, I think we need to be able to divorce the vibe, the frustration, the sentiment, and the noise from what we've actually seen hockey-wise. And we know that the Canucks team that's going to take the ice tonight is, again, catastrophically limited, fundamentally compromised. But we also know that that's not the Canucks team that we're likely to see down the stretcher in the playoffs. Like, there is absolutely still a path for this team to look a lot more like they did in the game in the first 16 games of the season, where there were still some trouble spots in terms of moving the puck, in terms of them not playing defense as well as they had the year before, in terms of the inconsistency thing. So by no means am I citing that as a panacea. But that team looked to us at the very least like a fringe contender, like maybe the somewhere between the 8th and the 11th best team in hockey. And as ugly as it feels and looks right now, I don't think we actually have seen enough, especially with what we know about the severity of these absences, that we should be knocked off that prior.
So I obviously agree with you that the Calgary game tonight are not going to be representative of what we should expect from the Canucks. You can't be making your big picture personnel decisions on the basis of these games, because it's just such a different universe. My concern, and kind of, you know, I was thinking about this morning before the show, and okay, 2025, looking ahead, what's my kind of big question? And the question coming into this season was, can they take that step from where they were last year, as solid, no doubt playoff team, made the second round, to legit Stanley Cup contender, right? That's what this season, until it got derailed by a whole bunch of different absences, that's what this season was supposed to be about. Obviously, it has not transpired that way. But I guess my question would be, is it still realistic to expect the team to take that step over the remainder of this season and even going into, you know, the beginning of next year? And I think what you're saying is very important. You can't answer a definitive no just because of how they've looked with Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson out of the lineup and everything else that's gone into this season. Where I do think it's reasonable to start having doubts about that, though, is, and I'm not relating this to any of the behind-the-scenes gossip, strictly the on-ice stuff, is the play of Pettersson and JT Miller. We're what? Like 11 months since we've seen elite Elias Pettersson consistently?
Been a long time.
Game-changing, controlling the game, elite Elias Pettersson? That's more of a slump. That is a long, long time to have not seen him at his best. JT Miller, he's 31. He's putting up points. 5-on-5 production is not there. I think it's fair to say that this has not been a stellar season for him so far either, right? And so, yes, you can get Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek back in the lineup. You can get Thatcher Demko rounding into form after a long time off and being like Thatcher Demko. And this team's still not going to be a contender unless they're getting simultaneously something very close to the best of Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. And that's where the doubt starts to creep in for me and go beyond just the, oh man, they've had a lot of adversity. They've had a lot of guys in and out of the lineup. That's true. And yes, they've done an admirable job of handling it in a lot of respects. But if you're like, do we have any idea when we're going to see the best of Elias Pettersson again? I don't.
No.
I would have thought it'd be by now. I was betting on it for sure, and it hasn't happened.
I'm actually surprised it hasn't been yet, right? Like, I'm surprised by the lack of juice that we've seen from him throughout this season. Even when he's been productive or played well, it's been him playing well and being productive in straight lines. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's been a simplified version as opposed to the, you know, dynamic world eater that we think he can be. And then JT Miller, I mean, the lack of 5-on-5 offense is wild. Wild. And then, you know, you've seen the recurrence of some of the defensive gaps that afflicted him in previous years and which we never saw last season.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean,
Where you get to, okay, is push forward a reasonable option? Yes.
You got to throw Demko in there too, in my opinion.
Sure. Right?
The fact that they've only got 7, because it's like the engines of this team, right? Hughes firing beyond our wildest dreams,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you've got Miller, Pettersson, Demko, and it's like you've got one of four. Like, when we talked about this team being at the level where they had margin for error this season,
it's because they had four, right? So like one or two can go down and you're still be really good.
Yeah.
And then three have not been present, basically.
And one has been playing out of his mind,
mm-hmm.
to the point where we've had long stretches of this season where it almost nothing else has almost mattered. But you remove him from the lineup and you're like, whew boy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this guy should be the MVP.
Seriously.
It's wild, the difference.
That's like, I get what you're saying about don't judge this team based on what they look like right now. But I think it's also very fair to have questions about the ceiling, even when they're fully healthy. And I think until you start to see the old Elias Pettersson, the best of Elias Pettersson, unless we start to see, you know, JT Miller look more like the JT Miller of last season, I think I don't see a way for this team to take that next step. That doesn't mean it's time to give up. That doesn't mean, as you said, it's time to blow it all up and, oh, we should have rebuilt or anything like that. But I do think it's fair for fans, media, and I'm sure management is probably asking some tough questions along these lines as well. I mean, Patrick Alvin certainly sounded like he's part of a management team that's been asking some tough questions. And I think the longer it goes without seeing the best of both those guys, the more you start to have to wonder, okay, are they going to be able to take that next step? So that's kind of the question, the number one question for me for the Canucks as we go into 2025 here. And we're not going to get an answer to it tonight because Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes aren't in the lineup, but they'll have a chance to put 2 points on the board against the Seattle Kraken. And we will talk to Allison Lucan, who, of course, does a fantastic job covering the Kraken in Seattle. We'll get her thoughts on their season and the game tonight next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We're live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your thoughts in. We'll have an open segment to wrap up the show on a Canucks game day here. They're taking on the Seattle Kraken, and we'll talk to Allison Lucan momentarily here as the Canucks get ready to take on the Kraken. Kraken won a couple in a row, but still below the 500 points percentage bar in the NHL right now in the Western Conference standing. So one of those teams trying to find some traction to get in their groove in the playoff race in the Western Conference. All right, now joining us, as mentioned, she is a Seattle Kraken analyst, also on the Too Many Men podcast. She is Allison Lucan. Allison, thank you as always for talking to us. How are you?
Well, I'm great. Happy New Year to you both. And I've been listening to some of Drance's opinions here of late, so I have some thoughts.
All right. Well, Happy New Year to you, first of all,
Let's get into it, though.
Hold on.
No time for niceties.
Hold on. No.
Allison wants to fight. Let's go.
No, I don't know about that. But I was even saying earlier, I mean, obviously we'll talk crack and we'll talk the game tonight, but I am very curious, Allison, to get, I don't know if these are the opinions you're referring to or not, but I'm curious just to kind of get your take on the Canucks season, as you've observed a division rival of the Seattle Kraken. It's been a wild one up here, I'll tell you. What have you thought of the Canucks, how they've played, all the absences, all of it so far this year?
Why? Is something going on up there? I hadn't heard any news.
Just a bit.
Well, Allison, you know, it's funny, guys. We talked about this, right, when we were talking about the Kraken, of, you know, a team that has a season like the Canucks had last year, similar in some ways to what the Kraken did a couple of years ago, and what does the follow-up look like, right? And they're not the same teams, of course. I'm not trying to sell that to anyone, but there are some similarities, some key injuries to big-time players. There's, you know, some regression going on, heightened expectations. But I do think you guys can't help yourself with some of the drama management. This is, Drance goes on this morning to Halford and Brough, and for 20 minutes complains about how everything's terrible and compares the team to San Jose and Anaheim, and then gets asked, well, is the team going to make the playoffs? And he goes, yes. I'm like, come on, Drance, what are we doing?
Hey, no, but I'm talking in the short term, Allison. Like, tonight, we have to look at them as having the same odds of beating the Kraken as Seattle as San Jose or Anaheim would. But that's not who I think they are. That's who I think they are right now without Quinn Hughes.
I will allow it. Are you hanging in with the news that there might be a scratch on the back end that I think you're not happy with.
I mentioned in the first segment, just like Spidey senses tingling. I feel like they're going to want to get Brisebois in. If they get Brisebois in, I'm expecting it to be Brännström out. Did you see anything at the rink? Was he skating late?
Unfortunately, we do different rinks for morning skate.
Right.
So I'm going on the reports, you know, from Jeff Patterson and others. So we're all going to find out together, I guess.
Yikes. Yeah. So you'll see it. But I mean, if Brännström is out without question and by some margin, Vancouver's most adept puck mover on the back end tonight would be Noah Juulsen.
Yes. Agree.
That's a problem, Allison.
Well, I mean, listen, by the numbers, he is your best stretch passer that you've got healthy right now. So
he's got the best feet. No question about it.
That's where you're at. But listen, it's, you know,
I'm going to find a bridge to jump off of. But
no, you just said they're going to be a playoff team.
Well,
listen,
they should be. I mean, they have like Quinn Hughes is one of the seven most impactful skaters in the sport right now. I might put him in the top three based on what I've seen since he left the lineup. But man, like, so they've played about 1,000 5-on-5 minutes now without Quinn Hughes this season, Allison. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like -275 shot attempt differential. It's a -120 shot differential. It's a -100+ scoring chance differential, and it's a -12 goal differential. And that's like 1,028 minutes or something. Like 1,000. You extrapolate that over a full season. That's lottery team. Like, that's, wow, they really might have a shot at getting Schaefer in the draft lottery. Like,
yeah.
Misa season, baby. That's like that level of performance. And yet, they're so good in Hughes' minutes that I'm pretty confident they'll be able to eke out the eighth spot in the West. On him alone.
Well, listen, I saw that on The Athletic. I saw that. We had a similar stat before the game a couple days ago. Let me drop this one on you. If you go to Evolving Hockey and you run every season for which they have data, so 18 season long, this year's team scores at the highest rate of any team and has the second best even strength goal differential with Quinn Hughes on the ice. You take him off, they're just above the bottom 10% in the league, and that's 552 teams.
Oh,
wow. That's hard to think of a more stark separation than that.
So
that's incredible.
We're doing more research on your team than my team these days. What's going on here?
That's incredible. Well, you're like all of us, captivated by Quinn Hughes. No, but, you know, I mean, so really what we're talking about isn't even the difference between being, like, they're like the you know, they're like the Vegas Golden Knights with Quinn Hughes on the ice, and they're like the Anaheim Ducks without him. It's more like they're like the Anaheim Ducks without him, and they're like an elite team, like the 09 Blackhawks with him.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge compliment to the player, and it brings up, I know this is a narrative going on throughout Canucks Nation right now, but it's what are the bigger issues with how this roster is currently constructed, right? Is this a long-term championship caliber roster? If one player that significantly good, or are there significant issues that have to be addressed elsewhere?
Well, and it's fascinating too when teams are in this situation where one player is doing so much and making such a big impact. And I think maybe back to, you know, maybe you go back 5 years to the Connor McDavid Oilers, right before they had really rounded into form into a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. And it was incredible when he was on the ice, but it was just everything happening when he was off the ice. I almost wonder if it poses a challenge to management sometimes, right? To see clearly what the rest of your team is doing because you have such a phenomenal force at the top of the lineup. And, you know, I think sometimes we look at it and think, well, hey, you just got to find a way to tread water or break even in the non-Hughes minutes and you'll be exceptional. But it does seem like it can be hard to accurately diagnose what's going on with your team when you have a player like Hughes making such a big impact in his minutes.
For sure. And so let's go back to the top. I'm curious on your guys' thoughts on this. You know, 2 years ago, the Kraken had such an explosive season. They were just happy to be here. And then that next season, last year, it's some reality set in and some changes had to be made. So now here we are, almost 40 games in for the Canucks. How are the views changing, if at all, on what the team did last season?
I definitely think there's more people looking at it and saying that was fool's gold. Now, and I'm not saying that's the correct point of view necessarily, but I think we just based on what we get in our inbox and see on social media, I think that is becoming maybe not the dominant opinion, but more prevalent, certainly than it was last year when everything was going really
well. When it was only my opinion.
Yes, when it was just Durant singing that.
You'll be shocked, but the market has once again caught up to me. And actually, they've gone beyond. They've gone beyond because I wasn't buying the Canucks have the best goal differential in the first 30 games of a season since the 1980s Oilers portion of the Canucks' success last season, which was, you know, through January. But what we saw after January, where they became this high-end defensive team, that I bought. Like, that I actually thought was the basis of a team that could take a step. And what's sort of interesting about where we're at now, and why I was, you know, splitting the baby King Solomon style on the Halford and Bruff earlier today, Allison, as you've so rightly called me out for, is there were signs in the first 16 games of the year or so prior to Miller's leave that the team had perhaps grafted at least a little bit more ability to generate offensively onto, you know, a pretty sturdy sort of defensive baseline. And that, I thought, was pretty interesting from a, hey, maybe this team can sustainably be good year over year perspective.
Sure. Sure. But it's, you know, it is quite stark, actually, when you look, you know, we look at the numbers from a couple different places. We're lucky to have some of the Sport Logic data, and even defensively, you know, right now, this Canucks team, and I don't think these numbers have caught up to the Quinn Hughes absence, right? But I mean, they're still just middle of the pack, and the offense is definitely thirsting for something. They're really only, you know, towards the positive on chances off the forecheck and ozone possession time. And from what I'm able to follow, I don't think that's the only identity that Rick Tocchet wants his team to play with.
No, they spent all training camp and all summer talking about being far more productive off the rush, and we actually saw signs of it for about 15 games. And now I wonder if they overreacted a little bit systematically to the Miller absence, turned the dial a little bit too far in terms of playing conservative hockey. But now, I mean, if you see a rush, a Canucks scoring chance off the rush these days is like seeing a comet. It's like, oh, I can't wait for another decade to pass before I see it again.
Now watch me jinx myself for tonight. Right now, in all situations, they're dead last in the league in rush chances per game. 4.7 per game.
Yeah.
Dead last.
Yeah, and it's them and the Maple Leafs and then everyone else, right? They're like, not just last, they're keeping very rare company, and those two teams are like way outside the norm.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, but listen, like you say, it's, unless you're the Rangers, you've made enough hay, hopefully, at the start of the season, that if you can weather these injuries and sort out the Miller-Pedersen of it all, that you know, this is a team that's in a better position than a lot of other teams right now to be playing an 83rd game, an 84th game, and so on.
And Allison, you mentioned Pedersen there, and I do, we will talk Kraken, don't worry, I promise, but you're giving us great stuff on the Canucks, so this is fantastic. You know, I think a lot of people, certainly myself included, thought, okay, tough ending to last season, didn't show up in the playoffs, didn't perform, tendonitis, who knows what's going on there. You know, hey, summer to reset, get healthy, clear his mind, he's going to come back and he's going to be the old Pedersen that we've become accustomed to. It hasn't happened. And there's been stretches where he's been piling up points, but even then it didn't really look like he was, you know, vintage, dominant guy who could control the game, Elias Pedersen. And I mean, really, we're coming up on a full 12 months since we've seen that version of him. It's beyond just a slump now. What do you make of the situation? What stands out when you get a chance to watch Elias Pedersen?
Yeah, you know, and I'm probably colored by a lot of what's going on in the media, for sure. But, you know, you listen to guys who've been in the room. You know, this is hitting every major hockey podcast now. And I just, interesting, on for a different reason, I was having a conversation with a Kraken player about the role of different coaches with different players. And this player was saying to me, you know, the key thing is you have to figure out how a guy needs to be motivated. And, it, you know, what makes JT Miller great is he's at level 206 all the time.
And that's out of 10, right?
Right. And that's exactly. But if Petey needs a different, you know, I think of a very similar example that this might be a reach in some ways, but, you know, we all know John Tortorella. And Alexander Wenberg, his game almost completely shut down under John Tortorella in Columbus. And then Wenberg goes to Florida, has a career season, and is now holding a nice space in his career for what he is as a player. And, you know, after the fact, I talked to Torts, and he was like, yeah, you know, I was probably too hard on him, as I reflect. And if the dynamics are such between these two who are just being true to themselves, you know, the player that I was speaking to this week said, he's like, if they're beating you down and that makes you just want to shut down, that's a very real thing. You have to find the ways that they may not like it, but it works, or they like it and it works, but you definitely can't do the, they don't like it and it doesn't work. And if that's what's happening here, that's a tough one to solve, particularly mid-season, in my opinion.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, it's so crucial to what they want to do, right? Like, how do you solve the non-Hughes minutes? Well, if you have another superstar in Elias Pettersson, that goes an awful long way to doing what you need to do in those minutes. It's trust me, we've spent a lot of time talking and thinking about it up here, and we're no closer to having the answer, unfortunately. Okay. Let's talk Kraken a little bit here, Allison. They make the trade not too long ago for Kaapo Kakko from the New York Rangers. Speaking of a team desperate to shake things up, how has he fit in so far early in his Seattle Kraken tenure?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I mean, regardless of how this plays out even 6 months from now, I think the cost paid versus the value acquired is just a straight win for Seattle. That was a really savvy move, in my opinion, by the front office. But he has fit in quite nicely. The kid plays, I think it's four games without a single practice because of the schedule. And I think now he only has four practices under his belt. But, you know, he was on a team with no Finns. He comes here. He has a fellow Finn in Tolvanen. In talking to Kakko, I think that makes a big difference. You know, we're talking about what motivates and makes players feel confident. Sounds like that's very meaningful to Kakko to have that. He's living with Tolvanen. And he's got a lot of what the Kraken have not been able to do consistently. He's a big body. He's not going to get pushed around a lot. He's not afraid to use his body. He's going to do the work to get net front. And he's finding chemistry on a line with Matty Beniers and Jaden Schwartz. And right now, they're the team's best line. I mean, this kid is throwing stretch passes twice last game versus Utah. We're all like, oh, we didn't know that was there. And I certainly am not saying that's what he's going to be for all time. But I think for what the Kraken need, and especially for what they paid, this is a really good move for the Kraken.
Yeah, the playmaking from down low stood out to me too when I saw him live, you know, between Christmas and the New Year, play against Vancouver, Allison. My question with Kakko is sort of like, we see him as an upside guy, but he is 23 at this point. I do think that there were some signs, like at 21, I was holding a lot of Kakko stock coming off of that season where he had like 36 points, all of them at 5-on-5. Usage was a little low under a head coach who, you know, didn't play young players enough. And I had a lot of stock then. But now I sort of think when we talk about him having an upside case, are we still talking about something that's more like Nino Niederreiter than it is like, you know, like, let's say, I'm trying to come up with a star power forward. Then a guy like a Matthew Tkachuk.
Put some respect on Nino Niederreiter's name, man.
No, Nino Niederreiter's a really
awesome player.
Nino Niederreiter's a really good second line winger. And my point is if they ended up getting something similar out of Kakko in over the next 18 months, you'd say home run. But I think I just think when we say upside, people are like star power forward, and I just don't know if that's a reasonable range of outcomes anymore.
Yeah, no, I very much agree with you. And also we'll quote our Sarah Sivian, who always said, give me fuel, give me fire, give me Nino Niederreiter. It's, you know, I think if you really listened to what Ron Francis had to say when the trade went down, the organization had very realistic expectations about what the player was going to be, to all the points you guys just made, is that if he can be what he is, he's going to be a valuable piece of the puzzle. Is he the solution? No, I don't think that's what they're looking for, and they're not, and they want to see him earn and stay in the top six and contribute on the power play. But I think that they are very, very well aware of what they got, and if they have a solid second line winger who sustains, and they decide to, you know, keep his rights and keep him around after this year, I think they're not going to be surprised by him being what he is right now.
Matty Beniers on that line with Schwartz and Niederreiter, I'm beginning to lose my I'm beginning to shed my Beneer stock too. I'm panic selling my Beneer stock, Allison. I, you know what? I don't care about the production. I just want to see the like swagger and swashbuckling sort of vibe that he had in that electric rookie season. And even the like cup of coffee that he had out of college. I just want to see that back. Where's that gone?
Yeah, it's a good point. You don't see that. And you know, what I do still see is, I see him doing the detail work, the stuff that doesn't show up on score sheets, the defensive play, the small area play that's so valuable. But it was very interesting, that goal he scores in Vancouver. I mean, that's not a shot you're expecting, to, respectfully, not trying to pour salt in the wound, but that's not a shot that you have full confidence is going in the net.
No.
And this is a player who he needs to see the pucks going in to have that swagger build. And Coach Jessica Campbell made a really interesting comment during the road trip. She said that the staff had a meeting with Maddie, it sounds like maybe towards the end of the calendar year, and said 2025 is going to be your year. Just turn the page. Let's just start. And the team has really been focusing in terms of messaging on, they're certainly never going to be the Carolina Hurricanes, but just stop waiting for the perfect shot. And so that Beneers goal kind of symbolized a lot in that this is a player they feel maybe often overthinks finding the scoring chance and therefore gets frustrated. And maybe that's the lack of swagger we see. But just start shooting. Who cares? And when he literally just throws that puck at the net and it goes in, I think that hopefully is a little bit of a trickle to see him getting more and more confident. I thought he looked better last game. And again, that line was the best line for the Kraken again. But yeah, we'll see if he can reproduce not just the execution, but the point production and then the attitude that comes with it.
Philip Grubauer has won two in a row. No secret. He's been an issue for the Kraken. You know, one thing I like to point out to people up here is if they had a 500 record in their backup goaltender starts, this is probably a team we're taking very seriously in the playoff mix. Out West, what's DeCord's timeline, and are you seeing Grubauer's game stabilize materially here?
Yeah, we still believe, or are being told, that DeCord is day-to-day. You know, he's got an upper body. It's a lingering bruise is what we've been told. So I'd imagine they hope he's good to go for the road trip that starts next week at the very least, because there's a back-to-back in there for sure. But Grubauer, honestly, I thought his game last game against Utah was his best, and that was specifically because of his rebound control. I thought it was where he was most dialed in there. As far as his season, you know, there can be some quibbles and qualms here. This is the goaltender who's gotten every game two of a back-to-back and has not gotten the run support from the team in front of him. But he has had a couple games that I know he would not be proud of. And is his game improving now? I think it is. I think there might have been, you know, again, we talk about the confidence factor. Joey DeCord was getting more of the starts. And how does Grudy feel about that? How does that manifest in his game when he's not playing for long stretches of time? None of that is an excuse, of course, at the end of the day, because you look at the contract, but it might be that this run of play that he's getting, he got a couple more of these even before the DeCord injury, can maybe get him back to a little bit more competency in net. And again, he needs help from the team in front of him. They've been inconsistent. And when both sides are inconsistent at the same time, unfortunately, that's been more often with Grubauer in net than with DeCord.
Allison, this was awesome, as always. I mean, you taught us a lot about the Canucks today as well, so we appreciate it.
You always learn something from Allison.
Absolutely.
Especially about the stuff that you should know about.
Happy New Year. And I want to say also, say hi to our pal Brett Festerling when you see him doing some work for you guys now. And if you want to laugh, you should ask Brett about my T-ball coaching style. Brett and our kids played T-ball together a couple of years ago, and we coached together. So you can ask Brett about that. I think I made a big impression on him during that experience. So follow up with Brett about that. Say hi to him and enjoy the game tonight.
Former professional athlete Brett Festerling is like, I learned a lot about coaching.
No. I didn't say a good impression. I didn't say a good impression.
Well, I will do that, and you guys take care. You're doing a good job representing Columbus, Ohio. You got Kiefer there, who's a big story there, one of the first players to come out of the AAA program for the Blue Jackets, and they're really proud to see him doing what he's doing with y'all.
That's awesome, because he's having a fantastic season. He has been an undisputed bright spot of the season, so glad to hear that the hometown is proud of him as well. Thanks so much, Allison. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
That is Allison Lucan, who covers the Seattle Kraken, and she's also on the Too Many Men podcast, of course. And yeah, man, the she's dialed in. And as she said, and people texted in earlier in the show, like, oh, why are you guys still talking about this? Literally every major national hockey media property is on top of the Miller and Pettersson story today. It is like the number one story across the NHL, pretty much. So that's why we're talking about it. That's why Allison Lucan is locked in on it as well.
You know what, though? It's like when there's a bad hit in a playoff game, right? And then the next day, every national media outlet, every media commentator is talking about, was it a good hit? Did they respond the right way? And it's like, the game was good, guys. Like, can we talk about the game?
The game wasn't good the last game the Canucks played.
No. The hockey is not good for the... I think that's part of it, too. But I'm just saying, I really want to move on from this one.
The guy's got to play better then.
The guy's got to play better or another shoe will drop, right?
You would think so. Anyways, that stat she had about not just like this season Quinn Hughes and the Canucks, but if you make the team pool, like what, we should have like 550 teams?
Yeah, 15 seasons worth of data. The Canucks are one of the best teams with Quinn Hughes on the ice and one of the bottom
10%. Oh. Wow.
So ugly, man.
Unreal. All right. Thanks to Allison. We will take a break here. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet on the other side next here on a Canucks game day on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
You want me to think that you're wild?
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintech studio. 650 is, of course, the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Get your texts in. We got an open segment here to wrap up the show for today, first show of 2025, and it is a Canucks game day, of course. They're playing the Seattle Kraken, as we just discussed with Allison Lucan in the last segment. I wasn't sure if we were going to run Rick Tocchet audio today because when they've been on the road, there's so few people covering the team. There's been a lot of like 1 minute media availabilities with Rick Tocchet that don't necessarily have a lot of meat on the bone, but almost 4 minutes today from Rick Tocchet.
I'm flying to Montreal on
there you go.
Saturday,
so you're going to get some of those primo one-on-ones with you and Talk where you ask like six questions in a row after the game.
Everyone's so sick of me within like three availabilities. Love it. Love
it's
it.
Like, you're still here? What's going on?
This guy. We haven't seen you all year, bud.
Yeah, so I look forward to that.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Anyways, but before we get that, here is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Well, it's only been a matter of days since you guys faced off against the Seattle team. You held for most of the game minus those last couple minutes. What's the key to 60 minutes tonight?
Yeah, you just got to be confident in your game. Being connected, more five being connected. Staying to your game a lot longer. For me too, it's like we got to start beating our chuck a little bit more. I think, I call it pause hockey. Sometimes when you have a lead or you're tied, sometimes guys are waiting, and I don't want our team to wait. You got to beat your chuck, whether it's the net, whether it's the neutral, or even defending. I think that's the key tonight, is beating your chuck.
That DeBrusk, Miller, and Besser line, 8 goals produced with those three. What's been working with them? What makes them tough to play against?
Well, I think when Jake's got the speed to the neutral zone, obviously, Bess around the net, he's really good, and Bills, he's kind of a jack of all trades. They're a line that when they're going and they're all doing what they're supposed to do, they're tough to play against.
Any lineup changes, you think, Doc?
We don't know yet on defense. We'll make a game time on that one.
When you have two strong starting goalies and you've got a busy week like this and a back-to-back, what goes into the decision on who starts?
Well, we have a luxury. Like I said, we have two great goalies. Obviously, the back-to-back. Obviously, Demmer plays tonight, and then Lanx will be in tomorrow. So those are easy decisions. But, right now, keeping some guys fresh, giving Demmer enough games where he can get his legs underneath him. But we're very lucky we have those two goalies.
A couple general ones. When you're watching that game the other night, do you think back to when it was – that was standard hockey, standard procedure when you played the 3-1 Calgary, like all the fights and the feistiness?
Oh, yeah. I think rival games, well, back in the day, that happened a lot.
Yeah.
Guys hold a lot, back then, more grudges. Or you know, if you didn't play well, you know, it was, you know, it just seemed like guys, hey, we got to be ready. So I thought it was a great emotional response from our team. And it was a good hockey game. Obviously, they made the moments when they had to.
Didn't miss it, that kind of hockey? On a more
I don't like stage fight. I don't like just the sake of fighting. But when you feel something's getting taken advantage of, you got to answer the bell, whatever that is. And to me, tough hockey nowadays is, the guys know who has to go out and do their thing. But it could be a skilled guy after a team does something where he holds a puck or he blocks a shot. That's tough hockey. You know, yeah. Dropping the gloves. Not everybody's going to drop the gloves. And I don't care about that. But other guys have participate in the tough hockey. And like I said, it might be just holding a puck in the corner for 5-10 seconds to wait for a line change. It's little things like that, I think, what good teams do, and that's tough hockey to me.
Right. Do you generally, is that one of the hardest adjustments coaching nowadays, is the way the players and the game has changed to when you were 10 full-time Pims? Like,
well, I think there's more, you got to be more of a teacher now. I don't like use the word dictators because, the coaches back in the day were great coaches, don't get me wrong, but it was more stated, hey, you got to do this, or you're either not going to play, or it was more, you're not playing, or you're going to the minor, or whatever. Now it's more, you got to really teach. It's a why a generation. Guys want to know why. Why are we doing this forecheck tonight? And you got to explain. don't get me wrong. I mean, it still has to be a little bit of, hey, coaches, hey, this is what we're doing. But I think it's a little bit more, it's a lot more teaching, I think.
That is Rick Tocchet, and some speaking about the game tonight, others speaking about how the game has changed, but you heard, as we've mentioned a couple times and has been mentioned.
We got it back in the day. Back in the day.
Yeah. Don't know yet if they'll make a lineup change on defense. Game time decision from Rick Tocchet. And beyond that, talking about his team, a lot of what we've heard from him, right? Doesn't want guys to pause, beating your check, trying to make a play. Maybe feels like the team is still too quick to become tentative in certain situations and wants to avoid that. And he specifically mentioned, when you have the lead or when you're tied and in those close game situations, keeping the pressure up, right? Still trying to make plays, still trying to beat your check. We should also, we'll see. The only other healthy defenseman they have is Guillaume Brisebois. So if they were to make a change on the blue line, it would be Guillaume Brisebois coming in for somebody. Possibly Eric Brännström.
Most likely Eric Brännström
in that situation.
I mean, I hate it. I hate it. The Canucks outshot the Kraken 10-4 in Brännström's minutes. Mm-hmm. In the matchup that they had on the 28th of December, that was key in them building the lead. He wasn't on the ice for any of the goals for, but like at least those minutes were minutes that the Canucks were winning regularly 5-on-5. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the game really started to get away from them when they effectively only played him two shifts in the final 5 minutes of the third period and then surrendered multiple goals directly off of puck moving errors.
Mm-hmm. And look, I get with Brännström, right? Is there a reason he hasn't established himself as, a contributing player? Of course, there's flaws.
He played like 20 great games for the Canucks, yeah. And then he really did fall off.
Yeah.
But he's also their best chance at addressing a critical gap in their puck moving right now.
Yeah,
like, he's their only answer.
And I get the point of view of, well, look, in a perfect world, we're not playing Eric Brännström, but it's a very far from perfect world right now. And we're seeing the limitations of relying, when you take Quinn Hughes out of the mix, we're seeing the limitations of relying on the strictly big physical defensive lineup, right? Are there things those guys can do to help you win? Yes, absolutely. But when it's just the same type of player over and over and over again, we're seeing what that looks like, and it's not a big surprise. So look, if Quinn Hughes and Philip Roenick are in the lineup and Eric Brännström's not one of the top six guys who's getting regularly played, if he's in the press box, I can understand it. Taking him out when you're already at such a deficit of the skills that he brings is a lot harder to square. And yeah, we all know at this point what Rick Tocchet and Adam Foote prefer on the back end, right? They want the height, they want the reach, all of that, the physicality. But I think there's something to be said when the chips are down, when you're missing players, you got to get creative. You might have to get out of your comfort zone, right? Like, you're asking your players to maybe get out of their comfort zone. Hey, you got to play up the lineup a little bit. We might ask you to do some different things. Play on the power play, play on the penalty kill, spots you're not used to. That's part of the next man up mentality. And I think you have to be willing to bend a little bit on your player usage as a coach, who you're dressing for games as a coach as well.
Yeah, I hope Guillaume Brisebois performs well. I mean, he hasn't played all that much across the last like 18 months due to issues with head injuries, right? Concussion issues. And the organization is still keeping the light on in a major way for him to be a contributing player, a player who can help them defend and move the puck. And, you know, one thing about Brisebois is, right, like he isn't a tree player type, right?
No.
Like, he has some skating skill. He can move the puck a little bit. Now, does he do enough of that stuff at an NHL level to stick? Well, he hasn't to this point in his career, but you know, the organization has high hopes for, honestly, I know that sounds wild given how long, like, Brisebois was the Brisebois era, right? Like,
2015, we're coming up on 10 years in the organization, the 2015 draft.
Is he longer tenured? Cause that's the same draft as Brock Besser.
Yes.
So like, Besser's the only guy longer tenured than Guillaume Brisebois, and it's by less than 24 hours.
Yeah. Well, technically Demko is 2014.
Right.
So yeah, but it's like, he's top three, top three longest tenured member of the organization.
Incredible. So yeah, I mean, I'm serious though. Like, the organization has actual high hopes for Brisebois, and we'll see what it looks like. But I really get concerned when Brännström gets removed from this lineup as it's currently composed. I think the best version of this Canucks team by a mile includes Brännström, Hronek and Hughes in the lineup. To have all three removed, I just worry that this team's going to get bogged down and struggle to find answers offensively as a result.
And I do wonder also, I mean, you brought up Christian Wallanen's name earlier, right? Now, he hasn't played for the team since the 2022-23 season.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, which, by the way, I keep coming back to this because it annoys me so much. I was buying the Tocchet bump in a way I never bought the Boudreaux bump.
Mm-hmm.
As I mean, you'll remember, like, I probably wasn't high enough on the Tocchet bump, mm-hmm. but I really liked the way that team played. If you remember that blue line, it was like Quinn Hughes, Wallanen,
Akito Hirose.
Yeah. Yeah. Cole McWard for some games.
Yeah. And Ethan Bear.
And Guillaume Brisebois.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just like a bunch of guys, none of them that big, all of them decent puck movers. You know, guys like Myers had been hurt, like OEL wasn't in the lineup, you know, like, and it was like all of a sudden the Canucks had some speed on the back end and they sort of were learning Tocchet's defensive system, and it looked great. It looked great. I just don't understand. Like, I feel like this team could cobble together something a lot more effective if they honestly just sort of threw out their preconceived game plan of how they want to play with a big defense core.
Mm.
Like, if you
or
were
even
going,
if you limit it to like two of the spots,
if you
know what I mean,
if you were going into the game tonight, I'm not kidding you. If you were going into the game tonight with this, okay, Brännström and Myers,
mm-hmm.
Brisebois and I don't know, Juulsen,
sure,
and Susie and Friedman, I would have higher hopes for how this club could attack offensively.
Yeah,
I honestly would. Just because there'd be, you know, more solutions out back.
Yeah, it's getting pretty tough to ignore at this point. Just, you know, even that's why, like, a couple of weeks ago before we went on break, you know, Travis Dermott was on waivers. And I was like, well, is that an option? Just because at this point you're talking about, like, any budget option that can give you a little bit of extra stuff on the back end. And I mean, how many times did we talk about...
It's an option to give an interview on Canucks locker room dynamics, apparently. Who's the next Canucks player?
Who's the next former Canuck?
The name that came to mind immediately for me, just trying to think, just purely going on like who would be the most random name, was Justin Dowling.
Ooh, that would be the most random.
Who played, I think, 20 plus games for the team that same year that Brad Richardson did.
Jason Dickinson?
Yeah, that would be a good one.
Yeah. I think Jason Dickinson's the one, because Jason Dickinson had such a bad time in Vancouver, right? Like, it was such a miserable experience for him personally. I think he's the one. He's the one we got to hear from.
Yeah.
Tanner Pearson? Do you think?
No, because Tanner Pearson's got to be Team JT all the way.
Would Tanner Pearson, though, drop some, like, if the Canucks meet the Vegas Golden Knights in the playoffs, would, like, Tanner Pearson's a winner above all else.
Yeah.
And he's like a fourth line player in Vegas. You know what I mean? Like, he's exactly the type of player where you do anything, like you are judged on your ability to do anything to help the team win.
Yep.
Is it like Tanner Pearson tells all on the eve of the playoffs? Psychological warfare?
I don't think it would. You know,
he's not that type of guy.
No, the way to go wouldn't be tells all, though. It would be like the backhanded compliment, where it doesn't create a media firestorm, but right, you include something that you know is going to stick in the back of their heads. You know what I mean?
I don't know, man. I'm telling you, I think if you're Tanner Pearson and one of the things you can do is make sure that, like, Jack Eichel doesn't have to speak a single time to the media when you're in Vancouver, because everyone's interviewing you and everyone is interviewing the Canucks about what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's like an edge you've provided to your team. I'm serious.
That'd be incredible. He'd be a good one to talk about it.
Yeah. He's just too classy, I'm pretty sure, to say anything that would cause a conflagration.
That would truly, truly cause a conflagration. What am I trying to say?
Conflagration.
Yeah. There we go.
Sorry,
I got it.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah. It's like, what? What is this word? What am I talking about?
I don't know.
Somebody texted in just as we were bringing up Christian Wohlanen. It's small potatoes, but Christian Wohlanen has been Abbey's best D-man all year. Why isn't he being given a chance? And as I said, I mean, it's been a long time since he's come up and played games for this team. They've run through a ton of other options ahead of him.
The answer to that question is always because he's Christian Wohlanen. But also, I think Christian Wohlanen can play.
Christian Wohlanen looked good when he played for the Canucks.
Yeah,
it was a long time ago now, but yeah, he looked pretty good. And
he's got some game.
This is what I mean by, you have to have some flexibility as a coach, right? Yes, there's the dream game plan, and then there's the game plan you can do with what you have available to you. And we're in the second lane right now. We're not in the dream game plan lane. And I think maybe it's time for a little bit of that creativity. And I also wonder,
dream game plan lane.
Nothing better than that.
Is that like a boring suburban?
Did you ever did you ever go to, I don't think this is still a thing, but in the 90s it was called the Street of Dreams.
No.
And it was like,
is it like, I want to say it would be Christmas in Dreams?
No, it was like, I guess the developer would buy a bunch of houses on a street or something. And then like, it was like, come see these brand new, like, luxury houses of the future.
Wow.
And you could tour them.
That's a thing, eh?
It used to be in the 90s.
Like,
anyway.
It was like, this fridge talks
to
you.
Yeah, I know. And it was like, this is a 50-inch giant big screen TV in this weird theater room. It was that stuff.
This new AI fridge shames you for your diet choices.
No, but it was all 90s stuff.
Oh, okay.
It was because it was like 1995.
It was a time of real hope and abundance.
Yeah, it's exactly. Everyone was on the Street of Dreams in the 90s. I don't know if I'm the only person who remembers that or not. Tyler Langley, I remember the Street of Dreams. There we go. Yeah, that's
Nate
right.
Nate Schmidt. Someone says Nate Schmidt.
That'd be a good one too. I also think the Westwood Plateau, yes, 100% the Westwood Plateau, absolutely, that's where it was. And Bick just texted me, Street of Dreams was definitely a thing in Coquitlam in the Westwood Plateau, so Tri-Cities people apparently remember it.
I have no idea what the Street of Dreams is, but I'll tell you this much, my Street of Dreams growing up was not in
the Westwood Plateau.
No,
I gotta say, I have family who lives not in the Westwood Plateau, but nearby. There are some wild houses. That's all I'm going to say. There's some wild, truly wild architecture on the Westwood Plateau. If you ever want to go and just see some interesting home design, go check it out sometime.
Houses of dreams.
Yes. What used to be the Street of Dreams. Okay. Before we get completely off topic for the rest of the show, as I was saying about, you know,
before,
Rick Tocchet,
huh?
Maybe needs to, you know, be a little bit more flexible on the game plan. One of the talking points that came out after the Patrick Alvin interview was, okay, hey, talking about the top players need to be better. He's talking a little bit about how the coach needs to be better. But what about management? How much responsibility does management bear for creating this blue line where these are the options, where we're talking about, you know, okay, yes, Hughes and Hronek are down, but it's, you know, Myers, Forbort, Soucy, Juulsen. And as you say, maybe Noah Juulsen is going to be the best puck moving player in the mix tonight in Seattle. And I remember one of the things we talked a lot about when Jim Rutherford took over the Canucks was looking at his track record of building blue lines in Carolina for winning a Stanley Cup, and then also, of course, in Pittsburgh for winning a couple of Stanley Cups with the Pittsburgh Penguins. And it wasn't as if he only went after the trees, the giant guys, right? The refrigerator types on the back end. It tended to be guys who, yeah, maybe they had some size, but also guys who could skate and move the puck. And you know, Chris Letang obviously was incredible for those teams, but even when he was out of the lineup, they were able to keep having success in Pittsburgh. So as much as I can sit here and say, well, maybe Rick Tocchet needs to be a little bit more flexible based on his deployment and his lineup choices on the blue line, I kind of feel like Jim Rutherford has to get back to the old Jim Rutherford and put together that style of blue line at a certain point as well here. And I know it's really hard to do in season to kind of disassemble and rebuild a blue line, but as we continue to talk about, okay, well, how does this team take the next step? Jim Rutherford has the template for, you know, building on the relative cheap a Stanley Cup caliber blue line behind a stud at the top of the lineup. Like, he's done it before.
Multiple times. Three times.
It didn't look like this. So
actually, he didn't even have a stud at the top of the lineup when they won in Pittsburgh.
That's what I mean.
Time.
He was injured, and they were still able to do it.
Or in Carolina. Yeah. Franciszek Kaberle was like the number one guy.
So I just wonder, I mean, he has this experience to draw on, and we're all talking about, okay, they need to find that, you know, that guy who really moves the needle, who can be the number three defenseman. Look, for the team.
I think we're all I think we're all looking for someone who can move the needle.
Oh man, we're always looking for that. Number one on my list of things I'm looking for. Somebody to move that noodle.
Can they do tricks on the noodle?
Anyways. But I do wonder if part of the answer is not, okay, go all in on number three guy that you're really high on, you know, fit for the long term. But if part of the answer is, let's just find a bunch of guys who, you know, like the Ethan Bear types, right? Guys who can help us move the puck, and then still, hey, is there a spot for one or two of the, you know, big physical penalty killing, those types of players? Sure. But I wonder if the answer is more of a large scale disassembly and then reassembly of the blue line, just in a completely different mold than what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, to really move the needle, you got to go deep. No, maybe. I think the club knew that this was an experiment when they went all in on defensive size, right? I do think they underrated the impact of losing Zadorov in terms of the secondary puck moving that he brought. I think they underrated the impact of going from Ian Cole to Derek Forbort. Now, Forbort hasn't been in enough games for this to be entirely fair, but I do think that Ian Cole handles stress and pressure better as a puck mover than Forbort does materially. And so I think that combination of moves, right? You lose those guys. They kind of get replaced by Desharnais and Forbort, and, you know, Forbort's regularly injured, and Juulsen's a regular again, and you know, Carson Soucy has a tough first month of the season. That now you lose your top pair, and it's like, man, you're really paying for the lack of diversity of skill set on the back end. And so I do think that they recognized that this was a risk. I think they thought that it was something that might have to adjust or be adjusted midstream. And then I think the defensive market went completely wild and sort of boxed them in. They weren't able to find their Zadorov Bear midseason pickup, and now they're here with a noodle that just won't move.
I just can't move that noodle, man.
It's a motionless noodle.
I hate when that happens.
The worst.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
All right, no more noodle talk.
None.
Somebody texted in that we got to do tiers of noodle moving defensemen tomorrow. Defensemen that would really move the noodle for this team. Okay, we'll leave it there. We'll wrap it up. Obviously, we're at the end of our ropes here, so I'll give us a passing grade for the first show back in 2025. Oh, yeah. We made it to the end of the show. That's all you can expect.
Really. I thought it was a blast.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love to be back here doing this program with my very good friend, Mr. Noodle.
Cup of noodle. All right. It's Canucks game day. Have a listen on the station to the pregame show and the postgame show and all
rattled.
Of that. I just want to get off the air. I'm just like, I want to end the show. I'm done. I want to go home. We're back tomorrow, Friday edition of the
would
show
you say
here.
You're past it?
Yes, I am. Extremely. Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Find that, you know, that guy who really moves the needle, who can be the... Who can be the number three defenseman for the team?
I think we're all I think we're all looking for someone who can move the noodle.